Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, the show that explores issues from as many angles as we can capture. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday at noon and at your convenience at voiceofvashon.org. We are broadcasting on 101.9 FM and at voiceofvashon.org. Thank you for listening. The COVID-19 global pandemic, in addition to causing massive loss of human life, is devastating what we know as our contemporary economy, especially in the American system, which measures economic health by annual growth in gross domestic product. We're all wondering what our lives and our economy might look like post-COVID, and my guest today has an interesting take on the possibilities. He is Dr. Brian Check, Executive Director of the Center for the Advancement of a Steady State Economy, or CASSE, C-A-S-S-E. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, Susan.
So nice to be talking with you again. I will tell everyone, this is Dr. Check's third visit to Real Talk, and I'm always grateful for his insights. Brian, you've written that there's an economic silver... Oh, first of all, before we go any farther on that, could you just tell folks what CASSE is and who's behind it and your role in it?
Sure. Well, so the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy, we've been around since 2003, and I actually established CASSE back then because, I had a gag order in my job with the U.S. government. I was in the headquarters of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and my specialty had become the conflict between economic growth and wildlife conservation, but I was prohibited from saying anything at all about that. And so I decided on the side, like nights and weekends, to establish a nonprofit so I could wear another hat, for example, and talk about ecological economics and so on, limits to growth. So we have a board of directors that includes some of the leaders in ecological macroeconomics, like Herman Daly. Peter Victor was on our board for a long time. We have Brent Blackwelder, a very major environmental nonprofit leader for decades in the D.C. area. And then we have several staff. We typically have about a dozen interns at any given time. And finally, we have volunteer chapter directors scattered around the world.
Hmm. So you've grown a lot since you started.
Yeah, we have. I mean, I don't want to make people think that we're some huge organization. It's most of it's volunteer powered. We finally have a membership system that's a little more bona fide than it had been, in the sense that we have established an imprint, the Steady State Press, and we're publishing books now. And so when someone joins CASSE, we send them a membership gift, the one that we're currently sending. It's called the Best of the Daily News, D-A-L-Y, after Herman Daly. And it's a nice little collection of, it was 32 of the 304 blog articles that were published on our blog from 2011 to 2018. Then we had kind of transitioned into a new blog format and stuff. But it's a nice little book, and it has really helped us to get a lot more members, which during this COVID-caused recession, people are really looking for an alternative vision to the business as usual.
So let's talk about that. Yeah.
Okay.
You have written that there is an economic silver lining to the pandemic. I've said it so much, I can't say it anymore. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, we like to say that there are supra-economic indicators that are positive during this recession. And we use the phrase supra-economic because the typical economic indicators are all down. You know, GDP is down, employment rates obviously are down, and so on. But yet there are all these other aspects of our quality of life that, frankly, are better during this and during just about any kind of recession. The pollution, for example, there's been a lot written by now in the news and starting already in some of the science journals about the lower CO2 emissions and sulfur dioxide emissions. You see the NASA satellite imagery over China and various parts of the world where all of a sudden we have clear skies and the cleaner water in the canals in Venice and then maybe one of the things that we see the most is wildlife starting to appear in places again where they hadn't been seen for decades.
In towns.
So those are, you know, supra-economic indicators in the sense that you're not going to find them monitored by the Council of Economic Advisors, but they are very clearly directly related to the size of the economy. And these are indicators that actually trend in a positive or a better direction when the economy slows.
Say more about that, because to a lot of folks, that sounds like, well, yeah, it's nicer outside, but I can't pay my rent. When you're
right.
saying as the economy slows, supra-economic indicators are better, can you be specific about those indicators?
Mm-hmm. So when we advance the steady state economy as the alternative to growth, one of the main ways that we do that is by raising awareness of the fundamental conflict between economic growth and a series of really important other things, starting with environmental protection. So there's a fundamental conflict between GDP growth and protecting the air and the water and the soils and biodiversity and the climate. But it's much more than that, because we know that the environment is the context and, in fact, the foundation of the economy, because the economy has an agricultural and extractive basis. It's the surplus from that agro-extractive activity that allows for all the other manufacturing and service sector activity. So you must protect your environment, including the stocks of natural capital and the ecosystem services and the sinks to absorb waste. You have to protect these things from becoming overused. Otherwise, you're also threatening jobs. You're threatening the economy itself. It's just like if a human being grows to obese proportions and continues beyond that, they're killing themselves. You know, they're going to die from that. And so an economy, if you overgrow it, will die. And so while there are a lot of tough economic scenarios or a lot of tough financial scenarios among individuals, we're actually finally saving some time for our kids and grandkids' economy and their prospects. And then you take another step along that line of logic. You have to have a solvent and strong economy, not a bloating one, but a solid, consistent one, to have any sort of national security.
Brian, check. What is your vision of that solid economy, say post-pandemic or post-GDP?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you asked, because just one week ago, in fact, we published on our blog, the Steady State Herald, our first offering of an actual legislative vision for that, and we call it the Full and Sustainable Employment Act. And so the acronym for that is FSEA. And, you know, it's a little bit reminiscent of full seas. We call it the Full Seas Act because, you know, they used to say that, oh, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Ah.
So we don't have to worry about the distribution of wealth or alleviating poverty. All we have to do is grow that GDP and everybody's going to be better off. No, that's no long, that's not the case in the 21st century. So the Full Seas Act is our proposed legislation to conduct a gradual transition with all of the economic policy machinery of the United States that's currently set for GDP growth to ratchet that back down for incentives for population stabilization and for stabilization in the level of production and consumption, and not on a sector by sector basis, but in for the economy as an aggregate as measured by GDP.
Where do you start with that? That sounds really broad.
Oh, I'm glad you asked that too, because
that's what I'm here for.
You know, yeah. In fact, this is kind of another one of the a part of the silver lining in the COVID-caused recession is it opens a window for alternative visions for what comes next. And so we've been well suited for this for some time now because we've been studying the pro-growth policies of the United States, the central one being the Employment Act. The Employment Act was passed in 1946, and then the only set of major amendments were made in 1978 when it became the Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act. So that's when the U.S. government was brought whole hog into the pursuit of GDP growth formally in fiscal and monetary and trade policy. And our proposal is based on the grounds that, look, it's long time now for major amendments to that 1978 Act. The 20th century was the time for GDP growth. This century is the time for stabilizing the size of the economy. And so, you know, when you say where do we start? Well, we start with the Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act, 1978. We take all the clauses in there that are growth-oriented, and we amend them to make them steady-state oriented. And we've actually gone so far as to post our draft Section 2 of the Full Seas Act in our blog article, once again, which came out on May 19th at the Steady State Herald. And so we call for things like the establishment of a writing of the report on federal growth incentives by the Congressional Research Service, collaborating with the Office of Management and Budget and the Council of Economic Advisors. Then we establish a commission on economic sustainability, including the administrator of the EPA. We're going to make it so it's not all just, you know, Department of Commerce and Federal Reserve deciding on the macroeconomics of the USA. We're going to have the EPA at the table and the Secretaries of Agriculture and Energy and Interior, in fact, chaired by the Secretary of the Interior, because we need a report on sustainable population and optimal GDP. That's also called for. You know, if you're anybody out there that's familiar with legislation, Section 2 is the section of a major new statute with Congress findings and declarations. So our proposed Section 2 has 7 findings that are all about, you know, that there's a limit to economic growth and that there's a fundamental conflict between growth and environmental protection and long-term jobs and so on. And then the declarations are all of these basic steps that are taken to orient the government toward a steady state economy. And then the details, the fine details, will be in subsequent sections. And that'll include new policies and the amending of the policies that exist in the current Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act.
So, Brian, it sounds like when you're proposing that these three groups come together, Interior, the EPA, and Finance. Did I get that right?
It depends on for which purpose. The report on the sustainable population and optimal GDP, yes, that included agriculture, energy, commerce, and the Interior,
agriculture.
And the EPA.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So you're pulling together those major portions of our society and our economy with the hope, I take it, of them collaborating on the idea of stabilizing the economy? Is that what you're after?
Yeah, and I should clarify, we're calling for the establishment of a special commission, a commission on economic sustainability. And it's a high-level, cabinet-level commission that will comprise the heads of those departments, the secretaries of Ag, Energy, and Commerce, and the EPA administrator. So going beyond that, after those reports are issued, then we will have developed a 25-year steady state transition plan. And at that stage in the development of that, you have to bring in the Council of Economic Advisors, the Federal Reserve Chair, and the Secretary of the Treasury. But they will be drawing on those two key reports, the report on federal growth incentives and the report on sustainable population and optimal GDP. And using the information in those reports, they're going to have to produce this steady state transition plan that details and schedules the adjustments and modifications and additions and deletions necessary to establish a system of government operations that are most conducive to a steady state economy.
You are listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I'm talking with Dr. Brian Check, who is the Executive Director of the Center for the Advancement of a Steady State Economy, and has proposed legislation to begin to turn this economic behemoth around a new corner. And Brian, it kind of jumps out at me that you're talking about sustainable population as well as sustainable growth. That idea of population control tends to be a political third rail. How does your group plan to approach that question?
You know, if it was really such a political third rail, there shouldn't be incentives then in the tax code for having more kids.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is eliminate incentives for having more kids. We don't want the state subsidizing family size. And that's all that we have in mind at this time for the population side. I don't think we need to go a lot further, because the reproduction rate of the USA minus the immigration issue is approximately zero now. I mean, it's at a stabilized population right now. As far as the immigration issue goes, we have always said, as do most of the people that are very active in environmental justice and economic justice, they don't want to close down the borders when you have people from other parts of the world that are trying to escape extreme poverty and injustice. Our take on that has been, at some point, every nation state has to deal with sustainability. And if you try to gradually close down the borders while you're still in the rabid pursuit of GDP growth, it's a horrible thing to do, ethically, morally, and diplomatically, politically. On the other hand, if you say, as a nation, we now recognize we're in the 21st century. There is a limit to economic growth. We're not going to have perpetual GDP growth. We are going to stabilize this population, and then we will also help with whatever surplus remains after all the reforms are done, including things like salary caps, for example, then we help those areas, in those areas where there is widespread poverty, so that they can truly have a better life where they want it to begin with, where their homes are.
In their own homes, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, contrary to popular belief, people are not necessarily coming to the U.S. because it's so much nicer than home.
Right.
They're coming to the U.S. because they don't have another option.
Right.
Because
right.
home has become a place of terror. Another question comes to mind as I think about your proposal to transition from gross domestic product and annual growth. Jobs are going to transition. Does your proposal include anything like universal paycheck?
It probably will. I mean, we had a couple of weeks prior to this, we did sponsor, I guess you would say we sponsored an article. One of our regular contributors provided an article on universal basic income as part of a steady state transition. And in general, I'd say we are in favor of that. So the details of that we have to work out in one of the detailed sections of the full SEAS Act.
So this is a pretty powerful piece of legislation you're proposing. Mm-hmm. Do you have any legislators on your side yet?
We think that there probably are some on our side in spirit. We're not quite ready to be lobbying on the Hill or even talking too much just yet. Well, and then in addition, now most of that has to be done virtually. But we want to have a few more sections fledged out, and then start identifying those. But certainly some come to mind. Bernie Sanders would probably be interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Ocasio-Cortez will probably be interested. And we're hoping that there are some bona fide conservatives in Congress that aren't necessarily wild-eyed Trump growthists. You know, but rather are truly conservatives in the sense of trying to maintain a solid political economy and economic system for future generations as well. And then they'll be interested in this too. Because, you know, a lot of our goals are square quite readily with a fiscal sort of conservatism. It's not a social sort of conservatism, but in fact, the Full SEAS Act won't have a whole lot to say about social issues. It's primarily focused on fiscal and monetary and trade policy. And so that's why I think that there would be a chance of bipartisan support when we get enough information out there on the Hill about it.
You're going to have to do some heavy-duty lobbying. And what sort of response do you get when you mention this to other folks? How do people react to, number one, the idea of the Full SEAS Act, and number two, just the notion of a steady state economy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that the trends are positive. We're getting more and more positive input. And one thing we like to tell people if they're pretty unfamiliar with all this, we like to tell them that GDP is the single best indicator there is of environmental impact. And their eyes, typically widen a little bit, and you can see the wheels spinning in their head, and it resonates pretty quickly with them that, you know what, that makes total sense. The more and more people and stuff and production and pollution and activity, of course, that's a strain on the environment, and it has the obvious environmental impacts and financial ones as well, like land prices, continuing to become out of reach for people. And not to mention a thing called war,
yeah,
as nations come into serious strife for the resources that are required for GDP growth.
So what do you think about the impact of the pandemic? You talk about a silver lining. Do you see the pandemic as a potential acceleration of the idea of a steady state economy?
Absolutely.
How would it do that?
Well, because there are a lot of people out there asking now, and when I say people, obviously it's not a household topic just yet, but you know what is a household topic is the recession and financial problems, and so there is quite a bit in the media now, at least, about where do we go from here. Last week there was a front page thing in the Washington Post where various sort of conventional sorts of economic advisors were providing their thoughts on what happens as we hopefully move out of the pandemic and quote-unquote reopen the economy. And some of the people that are hearing those conventional proposals see it as, hey, there's nothing new here at all. It's just like we were doing before, trying to push people back to work, sacrificing themselves, quote-unquote, for the economy. And really, it's for Wall Street.
Right.
Now, yes, it's true that there are, unfortunately, many, many people who pretty soon are going to have to find some kind of work, or they will be or are getting in serious financial trouble. And that's partly a problem of the rising tide lifts all boats mentality, where we didn't protect the less advantaged types of jobs and lives, and we allowed CEOs to become billionaires and trillionaires pretty soon, evidently, instead of having a sane type of salary cap and distribution system.
Well,
so, yeah, they will have to go to work thanks to that
They will, and the culture you're talking about is the one of I get rich, I keep it for myself, and that does fly in the face of the idea of all boats rising with the tide, and we're beginning to see that we've been drowning a lot of folks at the lower income levels, and we need those people. We need those people to work, and we need those people to stay alive and healthy. We only have a minute left, and you wanted to mention something about the film The Planet of the Humans, which was endorsed by Michael Moore and produced by his friend Jeff Gibbs. I know I'm not giving you much time for that. Briefly, what do you see as the intelligent messages from that film?
That we can't get our way out of limits to growth by just green techno fixes. We have to deal squarely and explicitly with limits to GDP growth first, and then, you know, the technology that fits best with that. Yes, that's a sort of a second phase of sustainability.
So it sounds like you're saying we need to reduce consumption.
Yes.
To start with.
Yeah, we probably need a phase of degrowth. We're having degrowth right now. You know, that's what a recession is. We have a degrowing GDP, and that gives us a little breathing room. And, yes. So I hope that now's the time, if you're ever going to get involved in this, now's the time to join Cassie, for example.
Okay.
At steadystate.org.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. Yeah, we need that because the website is not intuitive to Cassie. Dr. Brian Check, Executive Director of the Center for the Advancement for a Steady State Economy, thank you for joining me once again. It's always good to talk with you here on Real Talk. And folks, you can find out more about that at steadystate.org. I'm Susan McCabe. I'm here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime to talk about and explore issues from every angle we can get. Thank you for listening.